Welcome to the CCA edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the cholangiocarcinoma community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor. We're talking today with Melinda Bacchini, Chief Patient Officer at the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation. The nonprofit, founded in 2006 in Salt Lake City, Utah, is the largest patient advocacy organization of its type in the world, dedicated to raising awareness of and finding a cure for cholangiocarcinoma, a rare liver cancer. Thank you so much for joining us, Melinda, all the way from Billings, Montana.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you have a very interesting story, a personal story about cholangiocarcinoma. I'm wondering if you could share that with our listeners. How did you get involved?
Yes, I would be happy to. 14 years ago, I was diagnosed with cholangiocarcinoma, stage 4, had never heard of it before. I was 41 years old and a mother of six. I was able to have surgery and they removed 2/3 of my liver. But unfortunately, like many patients, I had a recurrence 3 months later and was at that time labeled a stage 4 terminal cancer patient. I did the standard of care chemotherapies, not with a lot of success, and ended up ultimately stopping all treatments just because the side effects were so difficult to go through. Unfortunately, about 3 weeks after I stopped all treatment, I stumbled upon a clinical trial at the National Cancer Institute and was the first person to have a response with a new therapy, adoptive cell therapy, using TIL, tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes. And I was the first patient to have a response. Unfortunately, by doing that twice and having another treatment using an immune checkpoint inhibitor, it has gotten me here 14 years later, and it's been 7 years since I've had any treatment.
Incredible.
Because I had such a...
And I remember that generated a lot of headlines at the time.
Yes, it did. The story definitely was published in the New York Times, Wall Street Journal. It went around the world. And within that first week of those stories going out, I heard from hundreds of cancer patients from all over the world. They just wanted to have hope. They wanted a possibility of knowing there was a possibility of a treatment out there that might work for them. They knew that the treatment I did wasn't necessarily a given that it would work for them. But what I found out mostly was that patients just want to have hope and know that there's an opportunity out there.
Absolutely. Right now, the 5-year survival rate for cholangiocarcinoma is not very encouraging. I mean, it's, what is it, about less than 20%, right?
If that. Less than 20%, depending on if you get surgery or not, yes. Pretty dismal.
And even if it's caught early, it's still relatively low, right?
Correct, yes. The recurrence rate is quite high even after surgery, so the survival rate still isn't very high. We have a lot of work to do to increase our treatment options and improve that survival.
And still, there aren't a lot of therapies that offer survival for more than a few extra months at this time.
Correct. We're making advancements. There's a lot of research going on compared to 14 years ago when I was diagnosed. There's many, many clinical trials. A lot of new therapies coming up the pipeline. But in the last 3 years, we've had 5 FDA approvals here in the U.S., which has added, I think, extended the survival time for many patients. But like you said, it's not a home run, and there's a lot of work to be done. We can do better, and we need to do better for our patient community.
What is your current estimate of the number of cholangiocarcinoma patients in the United States today?
So overall, it's reported that there's about 8,000 to 10,000 cases a year. We feel that is a lot higher just with the health data that we work with, the claims data. We feel like it's probably closer to 12,000 and maybe even in the range of 12,000 to 20,000. So we do see an incidence increase.
And of course, in some countries, it's much higher than in the U.S., particularly in Southeast Asia, but we know why, because of liver fluke.
Correct.
Right. So I want to ask you, a couple of months ago, actually a little over a month ago, your organization published online this report on caregiver burden. And just for our listeners, it's the Diagnostic Journey and Life Impact of Cholangiocarcinoma, Results from Surveys of Patient and Caregiver Experiences. And of particular interest is this statistic that 34% of the patients that you surveyed out of 707 patients reported, and I'm reading straight from this report, symptoms consistent with moderately severe depression. I'm wondering if you can talk about why you did this survey and what its significance is for both patients and their caregivers.
Yeah, we partnered with one of our industry partners. We wanted to find out more about the burden for both patients and caregivers. So it was several years ago that we did the patient survey. I want to say maybe in 2019. And then a couple of years after that, we followed up with the caregiver survey and have compiled those results together to, you know, do comparatives. I don't think it was anything new for us to see those results, you know, being talking to patients and caregivers every single day. There was really nothing that jumped out at us and surprised us. It was just nice to be able to get that data and do an actual survey. The depression rate was quite high, but we see patients come through our newly diagnosed program, and there as well, they rate their level of anxiety at either moderate or severe, like 83% of them, which is no surprise. Again, I think when anyone's diagnosed with this disease, the first thing they do is Google it because they've never heard of it. And when they read those statistics, it's dismal. And so depression and anxiety are quite common for patients and caregivers to deal with.
Is it also because the effects of the medications they're taking might also cause depression as a side effect?
I think it could be, but I think it's mostly overall the prognosis and diagnosis and what they have to go through. The side effects definitely contribute to that for sure. The fatigue, the nausea, the things that go along with being on any kind of chemotherapy regimen definitely can influence the depression. I know for myself, I spent a lot of time in bed, and it definitely increased the depression and the ability to have a good quality of life.
Of course. And I see the quality of life is, of course, a factor in this report. You talk quite a bit about that. I wanted to ask about average age of patients. We also understand that even though cholangiocarcinoma tends to develop among people over 65, you're seeing an increasing number of younger patients. Why is that?
We are.
Why?
I'm not sure yet. I think we're there's a lot of studies going on to try to figure that out, but I definitely feel like we're seeing them. One, I think they connect, you know, more easily on social media, and, you know, we're just hearing from them more. I think the diagnostic methods are increasing, where cancers of unknown primary are now, you know, being diagnosed as cholangiocarcinoma. I think that there's probably environmental issues. I think there could be hormonal issues. There's a lot of different pockets. As I just returned from the GI ASCO conference last year and saw different posters on different issues, especially these patients with the FGFR2 mutation, there is a cohort of them that are young female patients in their childbearing years. So I think we have a lot to learn in that area, but there is definitely research being done on the young onset of cholangiocarcinoma.
And last year, I was at the World Congress on gastrointestinal cancer, and one of the panels being discussed was on the BRCA mutation and the influence of possible link between that and developing cholangiocarcinoma.
Correct. We're seeing that link. Genetically, there hasn't really been a link to cholangiocarcinoma. I would say over the last 10 years working with the foundation, I've seen several family members have more than one incidence, you know, mothers, daughters, fathers, sons, those kind of things. I wouldn't say that they're increasing. I would say that we're starting to see it more, but they're really starting to find out why. I think the BRCA mutation is one reason. I see patients with Lynch syndrome that have that. And I can't remember the percentage of our patients that have the BRCA mutation, but definitely that is a risk factor. And now the NCCN guidelines also have in their guideline panel for hepatobiliary, they have a little section on when to do genetic testing and which mutations to look for to send the patients to a genetic counselor for further information.
I see. Now, we spoke about the burden on the patient. Could we talk a bit about caregiver burden? Obviously, it is a huge burden to care for somebody going through any kind of chemo and regardless of what type of cancer, but this particularly is burdensome. Talk a bit about that.
Yeah, I think of my own experience of what my husband went through, and I just feel like he felt helpless. You know, I felt like he couldn't do enough for me, or, you know, he just felt like there wasn't anything he could do to change the situation. Right. We have many caregivers who connect with this. And what I tend to see is the caregivers take on the burden of the research, you know, trying to look for treatment options, trying to look for clinical trials, making sure the patient is taken care of, you know, trying to control those side effects. It's like a full-time job being a caregiver as well as a patient. It's a whole new education they never wanted to have, a whole new vocabulary. It's just a whole new world, and it's definitely burdensome and exhausting, you know, exhausting for caregivers to have to go through this.
So do you have any specific recommendations in the report that deal with caregiver burden, ways to ease this burden, and maybe just general awareness about the disease so that people can understand what they're going through?
Right. Recommendations is, you know, trying to find the time to take time for yourself, you know, put the oxygen mask on yourself before you help someone else. That kind of image is what we, you know, try to push out there. We have support services for our caregivers. We have a virtual caregiver support group where they can come on and get information. Though I will say, I tend to see most of those caregivers, instead of, you know, wanting support for themselves, are still seeking answers and support for their loved one, for the patient. We also provide a ColangioConnect one-on-one mentorship program, so caregivers can have a mentor, another caregiver mentor who's been through this or who is currently going through this, to lean on for that one-on-one emotional support. We've even added a bereaved caregiver support group, which I have to say is, it's heartbreaking. We wish there wasn't a need for it, but I've seen those caregivers come together and really rally around each other and support each other after the huge loss that they've faced. I think it's important to know that they're not alone and that there are resources out there to be able to deal with this. But in the midst of active caregiving, there are ways to gather support and to know that you're not alone. There are resources to help with the fatigue, help with the emotional aspect of it, and resources to know that they need to take care of themselves first.
In your case, though, you're a mom, you have a lot of kids. So in addition to your husband taking care of you, somebody had to take care of the kids as well.
Exactly. And I always say, just because you get cancer, the world doesn't stop. Everything goes on. You know, you still have kids to raise, sports to go to, houses to clean, and the normal everyday life. And normal everyday life also consists with other tragic things that come up. You know, there's still losses. There's still other diseases. Caregivers are dealing with their own, maybe, diseases that they have to take care of, as well as, you know, helping with their patient.
Right. So
it's just an additional burden, for sure.
In your case, how did your husband take care of himself and you and the kids?
Yeah, good question. Our kids were, when I was diagnosed, the youngest was 7 and the oldest was almost 20. One was headed off to join the Navy and one was going to second grade. There were several in between. And I will say those kids really stepped up to the plate. I remember a daughter at, you know, 10, 12 years old cooking dinners, another daughter doing the housework, doing the vacuuming. They stepped up. My husband, I don't know how he did it. I mean, it was amazing.
What is his name?
Steve.
And what does he do for a living?
At the time, he was a nurse. He's a nurse practitioner, so he's in the medical field, which really helped. He definitely had an inside track to, you know, the side effects and what was going on, and knew how to ask the right questions.
So I have a question. In reporting on not only cancer, but other diseases, and specifically rare diseases, a number of patients I've talked to have turned to cannabis to help them deal with the, especially with the nausea and the vomiting and the effects of chemo. How widespread is that in the cholangiocarcinoma community?
Very widespread. We hear patients talking about it all the time. I do think that there is a place for it, especially with that the pain relief, increase their appetites to be able to eat more and, you know, gain that strength back. And then also for, like you said, the nausea and vomiting. I hear patients educating other patients on it all the time. At the time of my diagnosis, I did not have the opportunity to use it, but I definitely would consider it if I ever needed to again.
Are there any clinical trials ongoing looking at the efficacy of cannabis with regard to cholangiocarcinoma?
I believe there's all sorts of clinical trials out there looking at that. I don't know specific to cholangiocarcinoma, but cancer in general for sure.
And I also wanted to ask you a very important question. February 15th is World CCA Day. What is that about, and how do you intend to mark that or observe it or celebrate it?
Yes, February 15th is World Cholangiocarcinoma Day, so we plan to acknowledge that internationally around the world. We do a big awareness campaign where we try to turn everything green. Green is kind of our signature color. We have many patients and caregivers and community members who have gone out and filled out applications to have certain buildings go green on World Cholangiocarcinoma Day, bridges, iconic things just around the world. I think I just heard yesterday Soldier Field in Chicago is going green. So different, you know, sports events like that. We just want to see, Niagara Falls, I think, is going green, different things. We have iconic places around the world that will turn green. It's just an opportunity to bring awareness to this disease that so many people have not heard of. We also have proclamations that have gone out throughout the U.S. Where our state governors can declare February 15th World Cholangiocarcinoma Day and bring awareness to that disease. I wished it would be World Cholangiocarcinoma Day always, and that we didn't have to go solicit these proclamations every year, and maybe someday it will. That's our goal.
And in April, just a reminder, is your annual conference in Salt Lake City.
Yes, our annual conference is April 17th through the 19th in Salt Lake City. We bring in patients, caregivers, researchers, physicians, our industry partners. We have regulatory partners there. And we give out scholarships to patients. So we'll be bringing in patients from the U.S. and we gave out international scholarships. I think we have a patient coming from New Zealand and Ireland. And then we've given out Canadian scholarships. So we just try to bring the community together to be able to focus on this disease and how we can look for a cure and bring hope to the future.
Incredible. How many people are you expecting this year?
Around 500 in person and hopefully up to 1,000 virtually.
Incredible. Well, we're about out of time. Melinda, thank you so much for talking with us. We've been speaking with Melinda Bacchini, who's the Chief Patient Officer at the Cholangiocarcinoma Foundation in Billings, Montana. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.